we'll see what's done.
Magic. Well, good morning, everybody, and thanks for weathering the storm to get over here. It is raining out, isn't it?
Beautiful.
Oh, it's beautiful. Oh, I guess I looked out the wrong window. It's an appropriate time, however, for us to gather in fellowship a few days after we celebrated All Saints Day. This is your feast day, after all. It is my feast day as well. It is a feast when we focus on the life of the Beatitudes, the stuff of holiness, that which is our unique and undeniable vocation, our call as baptized Christians. This year at our first Thursday gatherings, we are focusing on the third pillar of the catechism, life in Christ, or stated simply, the moral life. The title of this entire series. For the past 2 months, our attention has been on the dignity of the human person. By virtue of our baptism into Christ, after all, we enjoy a new dignity. As Pope St. Leo the Great reminds us, Christian, recognize your dignity, and now that you share in God's own nature, do not return to your former base condition, but sin by sinning. Throughout the year, the profound implications of this statement remain our challenge. In talking about the individual person, we have reflected on man, made in the image and likeness of God, our vocation to live the Beatitudes, our freedom, the morality of human acts, and the passions, the formation of conscience, virtues, and even sin. But this morning, at this November 1st Thursday gathering, our attention shifts away from the unique dignity of the individual person. As such, I have entitled this talk, The Human Community and Its Dignity. After all, Christ offers us not only a new life, but importantly, a new way of life. Not one of us lives as the Lone Ranger. Even those living alone communicate with others by email, some incessantly, or will be dealing with others at work or even here on First Thursdays. Each of us shares some type of communal life. It is, after all, in community that we grow and develop. Not one of us lives alone. As the Catechism states, the human person needs to live in society. Society is not for him an extraneous addition, but a requirement of his very nature. Through the exchange with others, mutual service and dialogue with his brethren, man develops his potential vocation and responds to his vocation, Catechism 1879. And that vocation is spelled out in great detail, yes, you got it, in the Beatitudes. In its mandate, our vocation is clearly social. In his introduction to the Catechism, Cardinal Schönborn, formerly the Archbishop of Vienna, previously the person singularly most responsible for putting the Catechism together, writes that the social communal dimension of man is an inseparable element of morality. He underscores what is unique about the Catechism, that the diverse aspects of the Church's social doctrine are fitted organically into the framework of all of morality, while the social and communal dimension of all human action is made clear. Catholic social teaching is knitted throughout the Catechism, especially in this part. From the earliest recorded Christian communities, those recorded in the Acts of the Apostles, it is clear the ideal of sharing and living together in community was integral to Christian morality, its life and dignity. 2,000 years later, the Lord continues to add to our number, and that happens as others see us relating, hopefully, to each other in a uniquely Christian fashion. Remember the song from the 60s, and who can? You will know we are Christians by our love, the sisters remember it. That is the only way that we are marked as different, as followers of one who gave us his life out of love for us, that we might share in our day and forever the dignity of being his sons and daughters. Love of neighbor is inseparable from the love of God, Catechism 1878. Furthermore, we can never be indifferent to the world around us. We are not innocent bystanders on the good ship Earth. Love is proactive, never passive. While it is true that each of us is created in the image and likeness of God, it is also true, and this point the Catechism emphasizes, the community of human persons also reflects God's image, God who has been revealed as Father, Son, and Spirit, a communion of persons. That love, which is the lifeblood of the Trinity, is a model for the human community, especially the human community which shares divine life. The Catechism is specific when it speaks of community, or in its words, a society. It defines society in this way, as a group of persons bound together organically by a principle of unity that goes beyond each of them. By means of society, each man is established as an heir and receives certain talents that enrich his identity and whose fruits he must develop. He rightly owes loyalty to the communities of which he is a part, and respect to those in authority who have charge of the common good. Catechism 1880. Although we are called to life in society, we must never forget, and this the Catechism repeats over and over again, as does the Second Vatican Council and Pope St. John Paul II, that, quote, the human person is and ought to be the principle, the subject, and end of all social institutions. Catechism 1881. That's the heart of it. The human person comes first. St. John Paul II emphasized this point from the beginning of his papacy. In that first great encyclical, Redemptoris Hominis, the saint writes that the Church cannot abandon man, for his destiny is so closely and unbreakably linked with Christ. Man is the primary route that the Church must travel in fulfilling his mission. He is the primary and fundamental way for the Church, the way traced out by Christ himself. Close quote. The Catechism speaks of three terms which are integral parts of Catholic social teaching and an interrelationship: socialization, subsidiarity, and solidarity. These terms exemplify the rich tradition of Catholic social teaching, a treasure which is often not emphasized enough in preaching and teaching today. What do they mean? First, socialization. It expresses the natural tendency for human beings to associate with one another for the sake of attaining objectives that exceed individual capacities. Certain societies, such as the family and the state, correspond more directly to the nature of each of us and are in fact necessary for us. But there are dangers to socialization. Excessive intervention by the state can threaten personal freedom and initiative. Catechism 1883. Enter the Church teaching of subsidiarity, according to which a community of higher order should not interfere in the internal life of a community of a lower order, depriving the latter of its functions, but rather should support it in case of need and help to coordinate its activity with the activities of the rest of society, always with a view to the common good. Catechism 1883. In our own country, that tension exists with various issues between the rightful responsibilities of parents and family and the obligation of the government and schools. Vigilance is always necessary. The struggle over the abortion issue is but one example. The principle of subsidiarity is opposed to all forms of collectivism. It sets limits for state intervention. The third principle of Catholic social teaching is solidarity, solidarnos. It is one used repeatedly in the social teachings of St. John Paul II. He refers to it as an error today, abundantly widespread, this disregard for the law of human solidarity and charity. Catechism 1939. Solidarity is an eminently Christian virtue. It practices the sharing of spiritual goods even more than material ones. Catechism 1948. And St. Matthew says, seek first the kingdom of God. But the Catechism is quick to point out that solidarity includes socioeconomic sharing as well. It has to do with the preferential option for the poor. Socioeconomic problems can be resolved only with the help of all the forms of solidarity. Solidarity of the poor among themselves, between the rich and the poor, of workers among themselves, between employers and employees in a business, solidarity among nations and peoples. Catechism 1941. There is a preference, in fact, a duty, to give priority to helping those most in need, most materially and spiritually. This is also Catholic. This is so Catholic that it is in our bones. It begins in the family and continues on the international order. How do these three Catholic principles relate to each other? Much has been written about sinful structures, as structures which oppress people. The Catechism consistently speaks of the priority for inner conversion and a call for the grace of God. But the Catechism insists that the acknowledged priority of the conversion of heart in no way eliminates, but on the contrary imposes the obligation of bringing the appropriate remedies of institutions and living conditions when they are an inducement to sin, so that they conform to the norms of justice and advance the good rather than hinder it. Catechism 1888. Charity is the greatest social commandment, a topic which each of us deals consistently with within our lives as a subject of authority, in our families, at our workplaces, in the community, in the church. The issue of authority never seems to escape us. As lawyers, those of us who are, we are regularly confronted with existing authority in a case and the challenge to determine whether it applies to our concrete new case. Other professions struggle in the same way. A few days ago, we were about our business and duty of electing a president, senators, governors, members of Congress, city and state officials at various levels. The Catechism acknowledges that every human community needs an authority to govern it. The foundation of such authority lies in human nature. It's necessary for the unity of the state. Its role is to ensure, as far as possible, the common good of society. Underlying the Catechism's discussion of the issue of authority, however, is the fundamental Catholic moral principle that the authority required by the moral order derives from God. Catechism 1899. This is a fundamental principle. In fact, the Catechism quotes God's revealed words on this topic from Romans 13:1-2. Let every person be subject to the governing authority, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, he who resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. Catechism 1899. The duty of obedience requires all to give due honor to authority and to treat those that are charged to exercise it with respect and, insofar as it is deserved, with gratitude and goodwill. Authority does not derive its moral legitimacy from itself. It must not behave in a despotic manner, but must act for the common good as a moral force based on freedom and a sense of responsibility. Quoting St. Francis Aquinas, the Catechism states, a human law has the character of law to the extent that it accords with right reason and thus derives from the reason eternal law. Insofar as it fails short of right reason, it is said to be an unjust law and thus has not so much the nature of law as a kind of violence. Catechism 1902. As St. John Paul speaks repeatedly and clearly to this point in his magnificent encyclical, The Gospel of Life, he writes, although laws are not the only means of protecting human life, nevertheless, they do play a very important and sometimes decisive role in influencing patterns of thought and behavior. I repeat once more, the law which violates an innocent person's natural right to life is unjust and as such is not valid as a law. For this reason, I urgently appeal once more to all political leaders not to pass laws which, by discarding the dignity of the human person, undo the very dignity of the fabric of society. Evangelium Vitae 90. The Catechism again underscores this important point. Authority is exercised legitimately only when it seeks the common good of the group concerned, and if it employs morality, licit means to attain it. If rulers were to enact unjust laws or take measures contrary to the moral order, such arrangements would not be binding on conscience. Catechism 1903. Now, I've been mentioning the common good on a number of occasions this morning throughout my meditation. It is another central theme in Catholic social thought. The legitimate exercise of authority requires taking into account the common good. What is this, or why is this? The good of each person is necessarily related to the common good, which in turn can be defined only in reference to the human person. By common good is to be understood the sum total of social conditions which allow people, either as groups or as individuals, to reach their fulfillment more fully and more easily. It consists of three essential elements of the common good from the Catechism. First, the common good presupposes the respect for the person as such. It would not be too much of a stretch to say that there exists in our land an increasingly contempt, not respect, for the human person. Certainly there is evidence everywhere of an expanding culture of death. We see this in the proliferation of violence in the streets and the media, the laws which permit abortion and assisted suicide, and yes, even the death penalty. Expanded drug use, hatred, racism, anti-Semitism, all evidence a contempt for the human person. All are failures at the recognition that every human life is sacred and made in the image and likeness of God, all undercut the common good. Second, the common good requires social well-being and development of the group itself. Development is the epitome of all social duties, certainly is the proper function of authority to arbitrate in the name of the common good between various particular interests, but it should make accessible to each what is needed to lead a truly human life: food, clothing, health, work, education, culture, suitable information, the right to establish a family, and so on. Catechism 1908. I think of the pro bono legal and medical and financial advisors, English professionals, all provided through Catholic Charities, which is so close to many of your hearts. I called the head of Catholic Charities this week to find out how much pro bono service in fiscal year 2024 alone. You know the number of social services people volunteer their time? $22.3 million. If that is not promotion of development and concern for the social well-being of the poorest of the poor, and consequently the promotion of the common good, I don't know what is. And many of you participate in these social programs of Catholic Charities and other programs. There are so many examples which are known to you because of your generosity. Third, the common good requires peace. In sum, that means the security and stability of a just order. Each of us has that obligation to keep the peace in our neighborhoods and our homes above all. The Catechism concludes this section of the common good by stating that it is the political community that the common good finds its most complete realization. The common good is always oriented for the progress of persons. Catechism 1912. Not one of us is exempt from participation. It is our obligation, an obligation inherent to the dignity of the human person. Participation is required, first of all, in those areas of personal responsibility, care, and education of our families. But the Catechism also underscores the importance of participation in public life. The final area of meditation this morning is about social justice. In some ways, everything we have been talking about in this section on the Catechism is, in effect, about social justice. For social justice is linked to the common good and the proper exercise of authority. Briefly defined, society ensures social justice when it provides the conditions that allow associations of individuals to obtain what is their due according to their nature and vocation. Catechism 1928. Stated differently, social justice is about right relationships with God and with each other in the world. In 1971, one of the first post-synodal documents after the Vatican Council, Pope St. Paul VI taught that action on behalf of justice and participation in the transformation of the world fully appear to us as a constitutive dimension of the preaching of the gospel. Focus on the word constitutive. Monsignor Charles Murphy was in his 90s now and still spry and young. I spoke to him the other day, my old rector from the North American College at Rome. Did his entire doctoral dissertation on that one word, constitutive. The working of social justice is an essential part of the gospel. It's not only optional, it's the gospel in action. It's the living face of the gospel. Jesus' whole life, his life of healing, of dealing with the outcasts of society, of table conversation with the despised tax collectors, all of this was constitutive of the gospel he preached. If you remember anything else about this lecture this morning, the word constitutive should be it. Social justice can be obtained only in respecting the transcendent dignity of man. It is respect for the dignity of the human person, from the rights that flow from the dignity of the creature of God. The Catechism makes it clear that these rights are prior to society and must be recognized by it. They are the basis of moral legitimacy of every authority. Catechism 1930. Respect for the human person proceeds by way of respect for the principle that everyone should look upon his neighbor without exception as another self, above all bearing in mind his life and the means necessary for living it with dignity. The Catechism makes social justice very personal. It's not simply about legislation or grand purpose programs of the great society. It can be, but at its heart, it is about doing away personally with the fears, prejudices, and attitudes of pride and selfishness which get in the way between us. Such behavior will cease, the Catechism teaches, only through charity that finds in every man a neighbor, a brother. Remember the old boy, the Boys Town movie with Spencer Tracy? Sister does, I'm sure. And Mickey Rooney? Father Flanagan, Spencer Tracy, tells a young boy to ease his burden and put his brother down. The boy responds, "He ain't heavy, Father. He's my brother." Remember that? Some of us do. That line brings tears to our eyes. It is the personal face of the entire concept of social teaching. Just seeing the other not as a burden, but as a brother, as a sister, as a friend. Everyone is my neighbor, my brother, my sister, yes, a part of my family. In his recently published encyclical, and I'm working through it now, or we've had more quotes, on the Sacred Heart, De Lexit Nos, Pope Francis writes, "This bond between devotion to the heart of Jesus and commitment to our brothers and sisters has been a constant in this history of Christian spirituality." De Lexit Nos 172. The duty of making oneself a neighbor to others and actively serving them becomes even more urgent, the Catechism teaches, when it involves the disadvantaged or those who in some way think of act differently from ourselves. As you do to one of the least of my brothers and sisters, you do to me. A final point involves the differences in people, differences tied to age, physical ability, intellectual, and moral aptitude. These differences belong to God's plan, who wills that each receive what he needs from others, and that those endowed with particular talents share the benefits with those who need them. These differences encourage and often oblige persons to practice, yes, generosity and kindness and sharing of goods. Catherine of Siena writes, "And so I have given many gifts and graces, both spiritual and temporal, which with such diversity that I have not given everything to one single person so that you may be constrained to practice charity toward one another." Differences thus became an opportunity to practice charity to someone less advantaged, not a burden. It becomes an opportunity to live our one's faith. The practice of social justice, after all, is constitutive of the gospel. Despite the differences within the human condition, yes, particularly the sinful inequalities which affect millions of men and women, the Church consistently insists that men and women are called to participate in the same divine beatitude. All enjoy an equal dignity, for all are created without exception in the image and likeness of God. Every form of social or cultural discrimination in fundamental personal rights on the grounds of sex, race, color, social conditions, language, or religion must be curbed and eradicated as incompatible with the gospel, God's design in the gospel, Catechism 1935. I think we thus have enough material this morning. I know it's a little heavy. It was heavy writing it. To live out this, All Saints Day 2024, which we just celebrated. Being a saint, and that is our call, that is our vocation, means being set aside for Jesus' living as Christian as Jesus lived. When we live the Beatitudes, which is our vocation, we give charity a human face. I know most of you do this day in and day out. When this happens, our faith becomes credible, alive, and Christ in us becomes visible for the world to see. It's the best form of evangelization. In and through our social action, we put on the face of Christ, the moral person in flesh. Amen. Christian, what do you have to say?
Well, I start formulating what I'm going to say about 5 minutes before, because I always know I'm going to.